It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, Cecil Harvell. Normally, Cecil and Wes Collins are on the program, but Wes is in court today, as we were talking about this earlier in the program. And so Cecil is the host for the program today with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. And just as I open the program to remind you, HarvellandCollins.com, spell out the word and please, HarvellandCollins.com, or a local phone number, 252 area code 726-9050. And with that, Cecil, we're starting off the year. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. And here we are. And you and me were just briefly visiting, chatting a little bit, and we were commenting to each other that we're just thankful to be in it and to be busy and right. And to have our health at this point and to be able to keep on day to day to day. And I certainly am very thankful about that. But Lockwood, we are here in a new year. what is today? The 17th, I believe, maybe?
Yep.
17 days into 2023.
Wow.
And I hope that folks have taken the opportunity over the holidays or here in the first couple of months, a few months of the new year, to kind of look at, dust off, review their estate planning documents. These documents, Lockwood, have a way of mysteriously getting out of date.
Yeah.
Particularly the alternate appointments for executor or agent under a power of attorney. I mean, just yesterday I had a gentleman in. He came in for a whole nother reason. I mean, in terms of his estate planning. But in reviewing the document, his alternate was his brother. And he then just a light bulb seemed to come on. He says, for heaven's sake, Cecil, my brother, you know, not with us anymore. He's kind of been gone for now about 3 or 4 years. I had completely forgot that I named him as the alternate executor to my wife. Wow, I'm glad I'm in here today. I was in here for other reasons, but we need to get that up to date. So basically, Lockwood, there are five estate planning documents now. The one that everyone seems to be most familiar with is the last will and testament, a very important one. But equally important is the durable power of attorney, an appointment for someone to handle our affairs if we are sick or unable to sign our tax returns, sign our financial documents, then an agent can do it for us. There's the companion to the durable power of attorney or financial power of attorney known as the health care power of attorney. They are separate and distinct in North Carolina. After all, the hospital doesn't have to get involved in our finances, and the bank and or stock company doesn't need to be involved in our medical treatment. So in North Carolina, there are distinct statutes, one on financial power of attorney, a second statute on the health care power of attorney. The health care power of attorney, again, gives our agent the right to sign for medical procedures, anesthesia, anything of that nature, again, if we're unable to. The next document is a general HIPAA release to give our loved ones and our family the right to our medical records. We all know that we're dealing with this every time we go to any medical or even dental provider now. They are having us up front in the reception area update our medical release. But Lockwood, suppose we are now at a place, God forbid, that we never expected to be. We're rushed over to Duke or to Chapel Hill or up to Sloan Kettering. Well, we weren't expecting to be in those places, so we had not signed medical releases at those places. And so our family needs a medical release with their estate planning documents that allow the family to get access to the medical records and the medical charts in these places that we never previously had signed a medical release. And the last document, the fifth document, is the living will or the declaration of desire for natural death, The thing that's important here, Lockwood, is not to confuse it with an emergency room document or a do not resuscitate. Those are different creatures. I'll be glad to talk about those things. But a living will or declaration of desire for natural death is a document that is, I like to say, more of a chronic situation where we have been in a persistent vegetative state. We are only, our life, according to the medical team, is being prolonged by extraordinary measures like artificial nutrition, artificial hydration, things of that nature. And that if any of us are in that medical condition, and after a medical chart has been fully and completely developed, then there might come a time when the medical team would turn to the family and say, well, did Cecil, did Mr. Harvell ever make any document relative to the discontinuance of all of these extraordinary measures? And that's known as a living will. So there are five important documents. And again, what we see so many times, Lockwood, is that we appoint someone as our agent, our fiduciary, our executor, and then we put an alternate, and for some reason now these folks are not still with us, or maybe we put in our brother or sister when our children, you know, were 12 or 15,
right,
but now our child is 25, you know, and is in dental school and is able to be our executor or our agent under the power of attorney. So these things can kind of sneak up on us, Lockwood.
All right, Cecil, a bevy of questions here. I think what our audience is hearing, and I would say this to businesses and business owners as well as to other organizations, I think it's worthwhile to literally ask your staffs or the people you work with, have you bothered to do this? Because these are some issues, and we'll probably get into one or two nightmarish experiences that you've had to deal with, Cecil, if time allows. But these are things that really would facilitate the settlement of a situation. Is there an issue of time? Could time in a situation, if the court say, well, Lockwood signed this back 20 years ago. Are we sure this is what he wanted 20 years ago? Could some of these signatures be challenged by a member of the family saying, well, even if I'm in my right mind throughout the period of time, could these signatures or these decisions be challenged? Is it possible?
Well, that's a good point, Lockwood. And we would like to see the documents be within the last 5 to 7 years.
Okay.
Right. There's a very tangible answer. Certainly the documents, a 20-year document, will be looked at, but we're almost guaranteed to know that there would have been changes in the law, there would be updates
right.
in the way in which that document operates, and it will then just depend on all of the circumstances as to whether or not we can still breathe life into that document. But a document that is that old is just very likely to not have the kind of contingency appointments that I've been speaking about this morning. I mean, someone is not living, or they're too old, or maybe circumstances have changed, not to mention the fact just being a bit out of date.
Right. Well, the other question then goes to the issue of the alternates for a power of attorney. As you just pointed out, the child was not considered at the age of 12. Here they are 10 years later. They're in school. They have all their faculties, and they're mature. They have the ability to make these decisions. If I were selected as an alternate, could I sort of designate, or can I ask the court, look, I think the better person would be the son or the daughter who now has better grasp of all of the circumstances, plus the fact I've been away from the situation for 10 years or 12 years. Is it possible for me to relinquish my capacity as an alternate and recommend to the court that the child be selected?
Well, you know, Lockwood, we want to, you know, the word court, we are lawyers, and you, of course, are a law-abiding citizen, and we honor the courts. But in the area of estate planning, you know, we really want to avoid the court. The purpose of these documents are to not have to have a guardianship, okay, not have to ask a clerk of court and or a judge to amend or modify or to interpret a will or to find an executor. Those kinds of things immediately, as one would know, take the stack that, you know, they were in the A stack, everything was going efficiently and cost effectively and time wise. And then all of a sudden we're in the B or the C stack and waiting for a court calendar, you know, of course, having lawyers involved, things of that nature. So the best adage, of course, is to just get the document updated. Wow. But with all that said, the court, yes, the clerks of court and the judges, if it's before a Superior Court judge, will listen to circumstances such as that. There are also statutory guidelines. In other words, priority of appointment. For instance, in a file, the spouse of our loved one is always considered first. If not the spouse, then the adult children. So there are some preferences in the general statutes that the court would honor as well. But just to say, in an up-to-date document, let's say that someone names their spouse, and then they name their brother. And then all of a sudden, yes, the child is 25. Right. But the document named the brother. We're not going to be able, the court also, Lockwood, is not going to want to trump the document, unless forced to trump the document. After all, the document names the brother.
Right.
So the court thinks to itself, well, there must be a reason why Mr. Jones named his brother and didn't name his 25-year-old son, or, you know, didn't take the time to update the document. And so we run into these very facts where the child is in the office and says, oh, well, gosh, my mom just didn't get around to that. And my uncle now, who's named in the document, is 80 years old. What in the world do we do, Mr. Harbell? Well, you know, we can have the 80-year-old renounce, but what if for some reason the 80-year-old is no longer competent and can't sign a legal document?
Yeah.
So you can see where this can spiral into complexity. And Lockwood, I've said now for a long time, gosh, I've been doing this a long time. It doesn't even seem possible. It seems like every day is my first day because I still love what I do. I'm so fortunate. But I've said for 30 years, Lockwood, what we all have in common is we want to avoid taxes, we want to avoid delay, and we want to avoid excessive cost. Right. There's always going to be some cost. Okay, I mean, it costs to live, it costs to die, okay? Some cost, but we want to make sure that the cost is in line, not excessive. We want to make sure there's some delay. It might take a few days to get someone qualified as executor, but it shouldn't take several months or even a year if there were a contested situation. So in other words, let's don't have those three things, taxes, delay, and excessive costs. Those are the three things, Lockwood, that I've always said that all of us have in common.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell & Collins, and remind you, Harvell and Collins, spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com. Cecil, I want to get back to the issue here of the powers of attorney. You mentioned three, which I found fascinating. You've got the durable power of attorney. You also have financial power of attorney and healthcare power of attorney. Under the durable power of attorney, the financial and healthcare, would they be lumped under those, or are they three separate documents?
Well, the durable power of attorney, Lockwood, is the financial power of attorney.
Okay.
Those are kind of, quote, durable power of attorney / financial power of attorney.
Okay.
It's just that when I use the word financial to define, I want to make the explanation that the durable power of attorney is a financial power of attorney. It's
all
the
right.
power of attorney that designates our appointment for banking and stocks and bonds and IRAs and retirement and tax returns and things of that nature.
Okay.
The word durable just simply means that the power of attorney is effective during the duration of our inability or our incompetency or our illness. So the power of attorney is a continuing, durable appointment during the duration of our inability to act for ourselves. You know, we have files, Lockwood, where I'll never forget, I was much younger, but, you know, a young, wonderful gentleman in our area, Pine Shores, who was in a tragic accident, tragic accident. His wife, of course, bless her soul, was killed in the accident. Mm-hmm. He survived, but he was incompetent. He was unable to handle his affairs for, gosh, a good period of a year or more while he was being treated. And so, of course, his children had to come in and be his agent for that year. But after that, all of his rights and competency were restored. So there are these circumstances, Lockwood, where we are unable to handle our affairs for a period of time, and then we improve, thank goodness, and we're able to retake our authority and go back into being the principal that we once were in terms of handling our own affairs.
Do you have also situations where you put in alternates in this durable power?
Most definitely.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
You want to appoint person A, and then certainly, absolutely, you want to appoint an alternate person B. And in our office, we have no objection at all to putting in person C.
Okay.
So I first appoint my spouse, I then appoint my oldest son, I then appoint my next son.
Okay.
I mean, if you have the ability, if your facts will align with that, then we are very pleased when they do. I mean, a lot of times, though, and I'd like to go here for a minute, Lockwood, some folks have a real problem just finding one person. We are always going to advise, Wes and myself, we are always going to advise that if at all possible, you appoint a family member, you appoint your beneficiary, you appoint the person involved in your estate.
Right.
Because after all, they have a vested interest in your estate and in your affairs. And there's no need to appoint a lawyer or your accountant or your neighbor when you have a son or daughter or brother or sister that will absolutely come in and do a good job for you and also is a beneficiary after all, okay? Mm-hmm. They have a vested interest to do a good job, don't they?
Yeah.
But there are certainly circumstances, Lockwood, where we just do not have that. I had a wonderful client in yesterday. She had a husband for many, many years, but they had no children. And she really does not have a local niece or nephew. Her brothers and sisters are no longer living. She really has struggled with who would be her executor.
Uh-huh.
She's also struggled with who the beneficiaries are, and she's come up with some good charities and a couple of good folks in her community. But the bottom line is that for her, it's been a struggle to come up with an executor, a power of attorney. And so in those limited circumstances, such as that, sometimes the lawyer will serve as the fiduciary, as the executor, as the power of attorney. But we try, and I'm glad this came up today in our conversation, we try for that not to be the general rule. Sometimes we even have to kind of make that real clear to the client. We'll be discussing with the client who the executor will be. They've already said that they have three children and that the estate is going to be divided equally to the three. And then they say, but Mr. Harvell, we'd like for you to be the executor. Well, of course, my first comment back is going to be, well, Mr. Jones, why is that? You have three children, and your estate is being divided by your three children, a third, a third, a third. Can't we find one of them or maybe two of them to be co-executors?
Right.
Because after all, they're your beneficiaries. They have your vested interest, and it would be nice if you could appoint someone in the family like that. And usually after some more questions are asked and answered, the client will go along with that. But there are those times, there's an exception to the rule, Lockwood, but there are those times where they will come back and say, oh, absolutely not. I do not want any of my children to handle this. they do not agree on anything, and they're not going to agree on this. I'm not going to put that burden on my daughter or on my son. I want this handled by a lawyer, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, if the client is intent upon that and makes that very clear, and after more intense conversations, then maybe we will leave it that way.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell & Collins. We've been talking about the issues of preparing for the new year and basically how to focus on your estate planning for your well-being. I want to remind you, the phone number, 252 area code 726-9050. Don't hesitate to give them a call. Cecil, I want to move to another item here in relationship to powers of attorney, the healthcare power of attorney. And it strikes me that that's an important issue now because people live so much longer. And on top of that, the care services, long-term care, for example, may require someone to make some decisions for an individual. The healthcare power of attorney, is it unusual or is it normal for someone to, for example, to have a durable power of attorney but let someone else take care of the healthcare power of attorney? I'm thinking somebody, distributed families. You've got one brother in California, mm-hmm. another brother in Washington State.
Or a member of the family that is in the medical profession. Uh-huh. Maybe they are a doctor. Maybe they're a nurse. Maybe they work in a hospital. Many times folks will align their appointment with who they, and they should, mm-hmm. Align their appointment with who they think would be best to serve in that capacity.
Okay.
So clients come in, they have several options. One of their loved ones is a CPA, mm-hmm. an accountant, a banker.
Right.
They think that's the perfect one to handle the executorship. But my other son, you know, is a registered nurse,
mm-hmm.
Has been in the hospital community for, you know, 20 years. And I think he would be great to handle my medical decisions. So, yes, absolutely, there can be different people for different duties.
You know, the other aspect of this, and we'll wrap it up here in a few moments, but the issue of medical care, the HIPAA release, there are numerous nightmarish experiences that people have had because they did not have access to medical information. And, of course, the medical providers could not, because of legal restrictions, provide any of that information. That generalized HIPAA release strikes me as very, very important.
I agree completely. I listen to this time of year to continuing legal education, North Carolina Bar Association mm-hmm. programming, which is always really excellent. Every now and then I'll listen to one coming in from a different state just out of curiosity. And I listened to one just here recently in the last week where this speaker was saying, you know, it's kind of interesting. I go out on a limb by saying I think the power of attorney, the HIPAA release, and the healthcare power of attorney are the most important.
Right.
After all, we are still living at that point. And it's critically important, if you will, that we all want our affairs handled appropriately at the end of life.
Mm-hmm.
The will, on the other hand, I guess it's important, says this speaker. But after all, we have moved on at that point.
Right.
We are no longer living. So it's kind of interesting. I don't disagree with that. I hate to say that I think that the power of attorney trumps the will, because you really need both.
Right.
But I am here to tell you that a power of attorney is a critically important document, and it needs to be detailed. You know, folks aren't comfortable. Banks, stock companies, uh-huh. registers of deeds, Department of Motor Vehicles, accepting some sort of initial here, initial there power of attorney. They are taking a very significant action on our behalf when a child goes into a bank and takes out, quote, $50,000 for mm-hmm. their grandmother. They're going to want that power of attorney to have very specific language giving that grandchild the power to do that. And so these powers of attorney that you print off the computer or find on the internet, I would be very, very cautious of those. Keep in mind also, when your power of attorney is prepared by a competent lawyer, the lawyer is able to vouch for the document, Lockwood.
Right.
The bank might have a question. Uh-huh. The stock company might have a question. And for the lawyer to be able to get on the phone and say, absolutely, Mrs. Jones signed that power of attorney. She did it in my office, notarized by my office staff. It was prepared by me after conversation with Mrs. Jones. Mm-hmm. And I think Mr. Banker or Mr. Stockbroker or whoever it might be, I think you need to accept that power of attorney.
Living will, DNR, do not resuscitate. They are separate documents.
They are. Yes, let's go there a minute.
Okay.
The DNR is signed by your physician after consultation, of course, medical examination, a medical history, that your physician, in concert with you as a patient, has honored your request or thinks that it is best in the medical opinion of the physician that you not be resuscitated. Uh-huh. If a client comes to me as a lawyer and says, Cecil, I would like to have a do not resuscitate, I, of course, will have to say to that client, Mr. Jones, I'm so sorry, but that is not a legal document prepared by your lawyer. That is a medical document prepared by your physician. I like to think of the do not resuscitate, Lockwood, as almost a prescription, an order of your physician, a prescription from your physician that authorizes the emergency medical services and ERs and other places like that, gives them the authority not to resuscitate. Okay. But again, that is a medical document and not a legal document.
Okay.
The living will, on the other hand, real quick, the living will, Lockwood, is a legal document that can become operative after many weeks or months where the decision for natural death evolves in the conversation with the medical team. Very different documents.
Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, this is a thank you for this lesson in estate planning. We need to take notes from this. As always, Cecil, thank you for your time. And again, Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, 252 area code 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. Cecil, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Lockwood.